8. Matthew chapter 8. We're going to begin in verse 23. It says, "And when he was entered into the ship, into a ship, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, inasmuch as the ship was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. And his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. And he said unto them, Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him?" Now, the last time we were together, we read that in the prior text that that the multitudes had really built. The following of Jesus after the Sermon on the Mount, which we know took care of chapter 5, 6, and 7. After that good sermon, after all the miracles being performed, healing of the leper, the centurion's servant being healed, the demons being cast out, that it speaks of all of these great things are taking place, and word has spread about the Lord Jesus and what he can do and what he is doing. And so people came from all around to see him and to hear him, which prompted Jesus to want to take a break. We back up to verse 18 and notice what he says. "But when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave commandment to depart unto the other side." And so we have to remember that in his humanness, he still dealt with fatigue just like anyone else would. And the fact that he spoke about this in verse 18 of preparing a ship, a boat, if you will, to go ahead and cross the Sea of Galilee with him, and then the fact that the text that we just read tells us once he got in that ship, he fell asleep, it simply tells us he was likely very tired. He's very, very much in need of rest. The boat or the ship that's being spoke of here was just simply a smaller boat. It was would have been something that the fishermen like James and John and Peter and them used in their fishing industry. It's not what, when we hear the word ship, we tend to think something very large. But this would have been a smaller boat, you know, holding maybe, you know, a dozen people or less. And but keep in mind, the Sea of Galilee was around 8 miles wide and 13 miles long. So depending on what angle that they would have taken. Capernaum is up into close to the top of the sea on the western side. It could be that they cut straight across there. It would have been a shorter distance, but depending on the angle, it was going to be at least a few miles going across the Sea of Galilee. And during that time, it sounds like immediately almost, he fell asleep. And understand the conditions of those times. People were more accustomed to doing these sort of things. And, you know, we have to have a bed, we have to have comfort, but a lot of people slept on the ground. In his case, he probably found a little corner of the boat. There's not sleeping quarters in these fishing boats like that. Found him a little space where he could just kind of lean over. The parallel passage to this is found in Mark chapter 4. Says he had a pillow. I don't think it's referring to like you and I would have a pillow, but he had something to lay his head on, or it wouldn't have mentioned that. And so he's just got still and gone to sleep. And also the parallel passage of Matthew or Mark chapter 4 tells us that there were other disciples, and it's also implied here in verse 23, other disciples got in some other boats and were following them. And so there's just kind of a small flotilla, if you will, of people that are going to go take this few mile trip across the Sea of Galilee. And then a storm hits. We have to understand the magnitude of this storm. The size of this storm is implied by the words, a great tempest. That word great the word that's rendered great there comes from the same Greek word we get the word mega from. Mega structure, mega millions, mega church, you know, big, big, okay? And so it basically tempest, we know that means storm, so it just basically saying a very big storm, a mega storm. That kind of weather was not uncommon in that area. It's the kind of weather to get Ron Roberts worked up a little bit and repeating himself, you know. It was bigger than average storm, okay? But it was also something that did happen from time to time. The Sea of Galilee, of course, still today, same place, it had moved, is about 600 feet below sea level. Okay, these are facts that I just discovered while studying. On the northern end of the Sea of Galilee would be Mount Hermon, which is a mountain that stands about 9,000 feet high, okay? And so what you had there, the conditions then and still today are such that coming off that, the cool winds coming off that Mount Hermon and down the valley, those northerly winds moving south, would come and they would meet the warm water that was in the area of Galilee and, of course, create, in some cases, some very, very big mega storms, if you will. And the kind of the size of the lake or the Sea of Galilee, again, 8 miles by 13, In the big scheme of things, that's not a very big body of water, okay? And so the way this thing, in my understanding here, the way these conditions could develop and the storms could become so violent that that sea could literally be, not literally, but could be similar to taking a glass of water and just shaking it. It was a small enough body of water and the storms were so large that it could just really turn that sea up. And if you were on it, you would know it, okay? And the other side of the other threat to these storms was the fact that how quickly and without warning they could develop and come upon people that were on the Sea of Galilee. Of course, they had their own ways of telling weather and this sort of thing, but they weren't nearly obviously as advanced as we are today. And so there were times they were just caught off guard, and this was one of them. And so the verse 24 tells us that this ship, when the storm hit, the ship was covered with waves. Mark chapter 4, the parallel passage, says that the waters poured into the ship. And so whatever the case is, it's a big enough ship. It's a dangerous situation for everyone concerned. And again, you have to think of Jesus being asleep in these conditions. If you're the Son of God and you know you've got the power that you have and that, as it says in Hebrews chapter 11, that all things are subject Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 11, that all things are subject to your word and your power, then I guess you can sleep soundly because that's what he did. It seems that even the storm had not woke him. And but he's the only one sleeping. The rest of them obviously are beside themselves. They're scared to death. Verse 25 says, and the disciples came to him and awoke him saying, Lord, save us, we perish. They thought this is it, okay? Keep in mind that some of these disciples were fishermen. We know that Peter, James, and John were, okay? There were multiple fishermen on board, and so I'm sure they had already done everything that they could do to try to secure the boat and make sure they were safely crossing the Sea of Galilee, and they were likely exhausted themselves. And so when they finally called out to Jesus, and you got to think about it, that's where God usually wants to get us, right? When we've done everything we can do and we're at the end of ourselves and we realize that, hey, this is not enough. I need something beyond what I can offer. That's usually right where he wants us to be totally relying upon him. And that's where he gets the most glory. You think about it. If they had just been good sailors, and they just woke Jesus up and say, hey, give us a hand. with these sails, and he'd have just fell in there and helped them, and they'd all done it together, and he'd have just been seen as a good, helpful sailor, right? But in this way, he's seen as the Savior. He's seen as the one that can fix anything, okay? If they'd have done it the other way, they'd have gotten to the other side, and they'd all been, once they were on dry land, they'd have been trying to dry things out, slapping each other on the back and laughing and talking about their heroic actions they'd taken and all of this. But the way it happened, that didn't take place. The way it happened, there was just one that got the glory, and that was the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's the way he likes it. So when the storm was over, Jesus had all the glory that he deserved coming to him, and that's the way things should be. Verse 26, notice it says, "And he saith unto them," now the storm's not over yet, okay? They woke him up and said, "We perish," and he saith unto them, "Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith?" So before he does his work, he has a teaching moment there. And it seems by his referring to their lack of faith that he would be being a little bit hard on them under these circumstances. But we have to ask the question, what was it that had drawn on the side of Galilee that they had just left? What was it that had drawn all those multitudes to them? It was his displays of power and authority, right? People had heard the teaching and saw that kind of authority. They'd seen the miracles. They saw that kind of power. And that's what had drawn the multitude to them to start with, that prompted them to get in this boat and go to the other side. So not one time while they were on shore did he fail in any attempt to perform any miracle. He'd come through every time. So all things had been subject to him up to this point. What would make him think that was going to change? Circumstances. Jesus doesn't change, but in our mind and in our eyes, sometimes the circumstances get so overwhelming that we think this is one that he's not going to be able to fix. We get it in our mind, This is, we're not going to get to the other side. And remember in verse 18, he's the one that set up this trip to go to the other side. So if Jesus is making arrangements to go to the other side, you're going to get to the other side, right? He doesn't arrange things and then halfway through it realize he can't pull it off. He says, "We're going to the other side, we're going to the other side." And so in their mind, everything was overwhelming. We perish. But in the mind of Jesus, hey, I've got this. I had everything back there when we were on shore. I've got everything out here on the ocean. And that's the kind of faith that it's easier to talk about, and it's really a lot more difficult to exercise. And so before we're too hard on the disciples, we have to ask ourselves how many times we've done the same thing. I mean, really. In much less drastic circumstances, we've doubted at this much or more. When we are in fear is when our faith is really put to the test. It's when, you know, we can look back and we can reflect on, oh, he did this and he did this and he did this and he did this. And then now this, the one that strikes fear, the storm, the mega storm, if you will, hits. That's when our faith is going to be put to test. And fear is going to say, panic, we perish. Faith is going to say, no, call upon Jesus. Okay. And so they got fearful and they panicked, but then they also, you got to commend them because they woke Jesus up. They called upon him. And he didn't let them down. Notice the second part of verse 6. It says, "Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm." In Mark chapter 4, it tells us the exact words that he used, and we know what they are. "Peace, be still." My grandma used to use the same words of rebuke for me. "Be still," she'd say. When I'd lag with her, she'd always, "Be still, get still." Well, Jesus said that to the storm, and it got still. The disciples had seen many, many storms in that region come on them very quickly, probably had seen many storms like this one, mega storms, but they had never seen a storm stop. that quickly, ever. And they sure were not used to this situation. And there was an instant calm, according to what our text says, and a great calm, if you will. And that, at the words of Jesus, speaking three things: peace, be still. You know, sometimes we're guilty of this sort of little faith, if you will. Jesus had control over the diseases when they were on land on the other side. He had control over the demons. He cast them out. He had control over all of these things on land. And then now they've got, and the megastorm comes, and he still had control. Okay, he had control over the elements, if you will, over nature, if you want to call it. Okay, and time again, he had come through for them, and he came through this time. And we have to remind ourselves, when he's come through time and time again, and then that mega storm hits, it's not going to be any different. We just have to depend upon him. He's going to come through again. But sometimes we get forgetful in fear. We think the situation, but this is different. This one's bigger. It's never happened like this before. But yet, he is still in control, folks. And we can always expect him to come through, great or small. And so with that, I'm going to leave you with these thoughts. Keep in mind that Jesus is the creator, okay? And so if he created all of this, then he is also can speak to the created and make it obey him. He created everything caused that storm, the 9,000 foot mountain on the north end, the 600 foot below sea level Sea of Galilee. He had created all of these things, spoke them into existence, and so he could still speak control over those things, and he did that day. And so he's over the big and the small, and that's where we get messed up. We're good with the small. When it comes to the big, we think, it might be just too big this time. Let me give you these a little bit of information, and I'll let you go. They say, now I'm sure as accurate as they could possibly be, they say that the energy of the sun is equal to 500 billion horsepower. Have no idea how much that is, but it's a bunch of horsepower. Okay, it's bigger than the engine Jeff's got in his pickup. It's 500 million billion horsepower. It's what the energy of the sun is supposedly to be equal to, and there are at least 100,000 million other suns in the galaxy. Guess who put them there? Jesus did. With that in mind, on the other hand, in a teaspoon of water, there are 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, composed of even smaller particles of energy. Guess who energizes them? Jesus does, you see. And so the same Jesus that made all the galaxies is the same Jesus that made the smallest atom in that teaspoon of water. And he created them, and he can still speak to them and have them do what he wants them to do. And we have to remember that. Big or small, he's the same Jesus. And in this case, I can't find fault with the disciples. I'd have been scared too. But they learned quickly that, he had it. And he took them to the other side. Okay, let's stand and be dismissed in a word of prayer. I hope you have a good remainder of the week. If you can, be here and be a part of our youth fundraiser Sunday night. We'd appreciate that. It's been a crazy, things have not yet gotten completely back to normal around here, and it seems it's been 2 years since we've had a youth auction, and so we're starting to get some normalcy around here. Let's keep up the good work, and we'll raise a bunch of money Sunday night, okay? Aaron, will you lead us in word of prayer?